I'll preface this introduction by saying I don't think you ought to do this, but if you have looked at the horoscope section of a newspaper, right, and I don't suggest it because it can become kind of interesting. Let's see what's in the horoscope, and then people can kind of become really into them. But if you were to look at them, or if you were to look at the fortune cookies, do you guys have fortune cookies here at all? Yeah, fortune cookies, they're like a little Chinese cracker. Inside you got the little message about the future. If you were to look at that, you would notice a particular trend. And the trend is, there is no bad news in your future. That's the trend. It never, ever, ever says, well, blow it, next week is going to be awful, just hide away somewhere. It never says that. It never, ever, ever, ever says, you know, this next year is going to be really tough for you, but you can make it through if you go to this place or that place. It never says that. It never says, things are going to turn down a bit. We're sorry to tell you that. It is always universally positive, okay? Everything's going to be fine. You're going to do everything you intend to do. It's going to be a lovely ride. Oh, just one little piece of advice just to help you through. One little sage piece of advice and it'll all be just brilliant. Now, what does Jesus say? In comparison to that, Jesus is now going to take a look into the future as he's talking with the disciples, and he's going to say, what is it that the Christ followers are going to get? What is their life going to look like? Is it all roses and cheery skies? Well, there is a beautiful cheery sky. There is a summer in this passage, and we'll look at that in a moment. And we don't want to be overly glum. Following Christ is the very best decision you could ever make. And yet, with those ups, you should know there are some tremendous big downs. There are some difficulties. There is some suffering. There is some agony. And there is some glory. Jesus is warning things are not going to be easy. And in particular, he needs to give us some specific directions, or we're not going to make it through. And that's what he's doing this morning with us. So he tells us, we will suffer. We will suffer. We will suffer persecution. But the very best ending awaits us who persevere. We will suffer. We will suffer persecution. But the very best ending awaits those who persevere in their faith. So let's go ahead and dive into this idea. First thing Jesus tells us that is that contra expectation, Christians are going to suffer, and it's not just going to be all roses and wonderful now that they've come to have faith. And so we're in Mark chapter 13. That's page 1019 of your Bibles. If you want to follow along, we really encourage that. We're going to start in verse 1. So as Jesus was leaving the temple, one of his disciples said to him, look, teacher, what massive stones. It would have been about 2 tons, by the way. Huge stones. What magnificent buildings. Do you see all these great buildings? Replied Jesus. Not one stone here will be left on another. Everyone will be thrown down. As Jesus was sitting on the Mount of Olives opposite the temple, Peter, James, and John, and Andrew asked him privately, tell us, when will these things happen? And what will be the sign that they are all about to be fought, that no one deceives you? Many will come in my name, claiming I am he, and he will deceive and will deceive many. When you hear of wars and rumors of wars, don't be alarmed. Such things must happen, but the end is still not to come. Nations will rise against nation, kingdom against kingdom. There will be earthquakes in various places, famines. These are the beginnings of birth pains. So the Jewish expectation is that the Messiah would come to Jerusalem and he would say, this temple is amazing. And he would elevate this temple and it would become the most important place on earth. That's the Jewish expectation. What's the most important city? Jerusalem. And what's the most important place in Jerusalem? The temple. And that place will rise above it all. And that was the common expectation. And some of that is hinted at even in the Bible, but maybe the imagery is not what people think it means. Okay. And so the disciples look around and they are absolutely amazed. And well, they should be. This temple would be the 8th wonder of the world if it was still around. This temple was bigger than the Parthenons in Athens in Greece. And it's bigger than Romans, the one in Rome. It was huge. It was amazing. It was mind-numbing in its brilliance. And Jesus says, this place has to be toast. This place is done. And they are absolutely shocked. It's like telling you, you're going to lose your home. Okay. They are dumbstruck by this statement. This is everything that we are holding on to. Now, there really is a problem here. And the problem is that people had come to trust in the temple rather than to trust in the God who had dwelt there. God's glory wasn't really there anymore. We know that it was missing for hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of years. The last time it really filled up the temple was during Solomon's day. That was like 700 years prior. But even since, the prophets were railing against the temple and saying, what a waste of time. You dishonor God there. And God himself, when the temple is before it's built, David says, I want to build a temple. And God says, why bother? I don't need a house. Okay. And so there are these hints that the temple shouldn't be elevated the way it is in their mind. But actually, something really profound is going on. And it's a sea change for faith. There's a sea change for faith going on. Instead of going to a location and finding God in that location, now we're going to go to a person and find God in that person. So it's moving from the temple to the real temple, which is Christ, okay? That's where things are moving. And now Christ dwells within us. And so we really don't need to be too bothered when there's a fire in Paris and it burns down the Notre Dame Cathedral. We don't need to be bothered about that. The Spirit of God dwells within us now. And so it's moving. It's a sea change in faith. It's actually about the people and not about the place. But Jesus says this all begins a whole process to birth the new kingdom. To birth the new kingdom. And he says, it's going to be painful, but we're going somewhere. And the somewhere we're going is very, very good. There are going to be, in the interim, he says, there are going to be wars and rumors of wars, famines and diseases and widespread deceit. In other words, everything that you read in your papers this week, just check out the Middle East and you can get every single one of those. It's stuff. It's happening right now. Wars and rumors of wars, earthquakes, famines, diseases, big fires. All of these things are happening right now. He says, these things have to happen. And so this isn't about the distant future. Jesus isn't saying, one day, a long time in the future, after all of the normal things happen, there's going to be some really tough times. He's saying, shortly, I'm going to rise from the dead. And from that point, until the point I come back, it's going to be rough waters. Be prepared. And the way he describes it is that it's the birth pains. This is the birth pains. So this is a good picture. Do we want a child in the world? Yes, we do. Well, great. Before that child comes, there's this very interesting thing that happens. You're going to go into labor, and then it's going to be painful, and then less. And then more painful, and then less painful, and then more painful, and then even more painful. And just at the moment that you think it cannot get more painful, and I don't know if I can make it, a new child will be born into the world. Jesus says that's what the new kingdom is like that's coming. That's what's like. This has to happen. It has to be. There has to be suffering. There has to be pain. In order for the new kingdom to come, it must take place. Take heart. And so what this means is that we actually, we who have gone through suffering, and I think we all do, that actually it isn't because we're bad people and we deserve it. It isn't because it's unexplainable and that's that. Part of what we're going through is because the kingdom of God is coming. And these things must take place. It's the birth pangs of life. And that brings me great comfort. That brings me great comfort. It's not senseless. It is not for without reason that you suffer. Part of it is the kingdom that is coming. Now, Jesus goes on to tell us that not only are we going to suffer just because the kingdom is coming,
We're going to suffer specifically because we're deciding to hold on to our faith.
That's in verse 9. So looking at verse 9. You must be on your guard. You'll be handed over to the local councils and flogged in the synagogues. On account of me, you will stand before governors and kings as witnesses to them. And the gospel must first be preached to all nations. Whenever you are arrested and brought to trial, don't worry beforehand about what to say. Just say whatever is given you at that time, for it is not you speaking, but the Holy Spirit. Brother will betray brother to death, father his child. Children will rebel against their parents and have them put to death. Everyone will hate you because of me, but the one who stands firm in the end, to the end, I'm sorry, will be saved.
And now, jumping down to verse 21.
At that time, if anyone says to you, look, here is the Messiah, or look, there he is, don't believe them, for false messiahs and false prophets will appear and perform signs and wonders to deceive, if possible, even the elect. So be on your goal, on your guard. I have told you everything in advance. So the basic idea of what Jesus tells us here is, you who are of the faith, you should definitely expect to suffer because you are of the faith.
Because you are of the faith. And so
you will be put in prison because of the faith. You will be brought before a group of people, synagogue, a group of people. It means a gathering of people. You will be brought before tribunals. You will be brought before judges. You will, some of you will be put to death. Some of you will have daughters and sons who will betray you. Some of you will be betrayed by your brothers and your sisters. They will do all of this because you cling to faith. And if you would let it go, then they too would let that go.
Now, that was really very true for the first century. Extremely true.
You know, the disciples, they all lost their lives because of their faith, except for John. But he was in prison most of the time, okay, towards the end of his life, yeah. And all of the early Christians, many, many of them were persecuted. There's a Colosseum, beautiful Colosseum. You can go see it in Rome. As you sit there, you can just imagine all the Christians being devoured by those animals for the pleasure of the Roman government, because that's what they would do with Christians. You guys want to believe this stuff? Good. You could be lion food. Now, this is something that has happened already. Dragged before the courts. All of these things have taken place to the Christian church, and also they take place today too. So you can go to other parts of the world, not Europe and not parts of America, but other parts. Actually, the majority of the world, there is real cost for being a Christian. You're really going to suffer. Just this week, Uma sent us a letter, right? And in that letter, he said, I can't get food to these people because the government is skeptical and they don't think, you know, but actually, why is the government skeptical? What's going on? The persecution that they are experiencing because they believe in Christ. And even here, you know, we're not going to throw you in prison just yet for believing. And hopefully the government will not ever get to that place. But it may. That would not be unexpected. But you know what? If you want to be a Christian, if you want to love others, you don't even need to tell them that you're a Christian. You just go out and love them and be kind and act like Jesus. Someone's going to find out. And, you know, that person doesn't like nice things like that. They don't like that. And they're going to make your life hard. That's almost a guarantee. Now, if you say, I've never experienced any persecution, any kind. You know, I don't want to hurt anybody's feelings here. But Jesus isn't saying that, you know, we're going to suffer persecution maybe if it's a bad day. He's saying that this happens. It's part of the choice to follow Christ that somebody doesn't like that. That somebody doesn't like love, and that you will suffer. And if you've not suffered, maybe you are the secret Christian, okay? Not going to do anything that looks different from the rest of the world. I'm going to hide myself. I'm definitely not going to show too much love. Just not going to do that. And that maybe is a cause for you to wait and to stop and to think, Jesus, how would you like me to live differently? Because I'm not suffering any persecution. Don't go looking for persecution. But you know what? If you're demonstrating, if you do the things that Jesus did, if you love the way that Jesus loved, you will also be beaten the way that Jesus was beaten. It's a fact.
And if that weren't enough, there's a second line of deceit going on, right?
There's people coming along, and what are they saying? They're saying, I'm divine. I'm the incarnate Jesus. We all are divine. God is in all of us, friends. We're all God. Does that sound familiar? Is it the case now that you could go to a bookstore and you could go to the religious portion of the bookstore and you could find more books on that topic than you could find on Jesus? Yes, it is the case. This is commonplace today. And so these things, they're tools, the suffering that we receive, the deceit of false messiahs, and the pain that we would endure for holding on to our faith. And so let's just make this real to us. These words are for us. It's not for some later day. They are for us. They are for those who walk by faith today. So let's just imagine this today, in today's situation. Let's just say there's a person named Sue, okay? And Sue is a Christian. She goes to church and everything seems to be okay. She's praying and whatnot. And then COVID-19 hits. And suddenly, Sue is away from all her Christian friends. She's not in the presence of her friends anymore. And at first, Sue is very bothered and she's praying a lot. But over time, Sue kind of gets fed up, and she's a bit fed up with God too. Because God allowed this whole, why are you letting me suffer? She says to God. God's like, I allow people to suffer. I do this. She says, why are you allowing this to happen? And then at the same time, Sue just suddenly realizes that nobody knows when she logs in to watch on Sunday mornings. Nobody even knows whether I'm there or not. And she thought, oh, what a pain it's been. And she finds herself doing that less and less and less. And then at the same time, she has a whole load of other friends who say, you know, it's really stupid that you're a Christian. You're so not inclusive. If only you'd be like us and just believe in basically nothing and that everything is good, right? Basically, just give it, if you'll just demote Jesus a bit, you can be one of us. And so, because she has suffered and because she's actively being deceived, Sue stops following. Now, here's something interesting about Sue. I can basically guarantee you that a person named Sue, somewhere in the world, is going through that exact thing right now. Or you could put any number of very common names, Bob, Jill. It's happening because this is the way things go. Because this is the tool that Satan uses to ply us away from faith, the suffering that we go through. And so this is what Jesus says, and this is kind of the meat of our text. He says, be on your guard. Be on your guard. Now, last week, Jesus said of those Pharisees, he said, watch out for their fake religiosity, okay? Watch out for the way that they are selfish, but then they throw that on top of religion and say, I can be a prideful person, and oh, by the way, I'm spiritual. Jesus says, don't do that. And now here he says a second thing. Watch out. Be on your guard. And what does he mean? He doesn't mean learn karate and fight them off when they come. He doesn't mean, you know, go to America and buy a gun and go hide in the hills, you know, and when they come, shoot them. He doesn't mean get a good lawyer. He doesn't mean practice what you're going to say when they drag you before the courts. The only thing that he means when he says be on your guard is determine right now that whatever you're going to go through, it does not matter. You are going to hold on to your faith. That's what he means. I don't care what you do. I don't care if you cut my arms off. I don't care if you throw me in prison. I don't care if you take my life. I will never bow to your God. I belong to Jesus. That's what he means.
Look at verse 13. The one who stands firm in their faith to the end will be saved.
You'll notice what it doesn't say there. It doesn't say the one who had good intentions will be saved. It doesn't say the one who had a really good conversion story will be saved. It doesn't say the one who cried when they came to the Lord the first time will be saved. It doesn't say the one who did mostly all right for most of their life, but then at the end decided they didn't believe in God, they will be saved. It doesn't say that. It says the one who stands firm to the end, that one will be saved. In other words, faith that lasts is the only thing that is faith. If you say you have faith and then halfway through you say, I don't believe in God anymore, God says, actually, you never did have faith. I lost my faith. I'm deconverting. No, no, no. You're not deconverting. You never had a conversion. You don't believe. You don't believe. Why do you not believe? Because you don't continue. And if you really believed, you would continue. Now, this is written to us, not because that's not a possibility, but because it is a possibility. We must continue in our faith. And Jesus is telling us so. That's what he's telling us. Now, before we move on to the next point, I need to deal with the portion of text that I've totally ignored that some of you have noticed in the middle, which is the abomination of desolations and people running for their lives in Judea. And if these days weren't cut short, then no flesh would survive. What is that talking about, that section in the middle? Just to answer that question, there are two ideas here. The first thing is it certainly speaks to what happened in 70 AD in Jerusalem. So shortly thereafter, after Jesus is risen from the dead, 30 years later or so, a guy named Titus comes into Rome and they besiege not the whole of Jerusalem or Israel, but just Jerusalem. Okay, so they come up against Jerusalem and they come to different spots on the way, but they're not after everyone in Israel. Just particularly, let's get rid of the rebels in Jerusalem. And they surround Jerusalem. They eventually take Jerusalem. And when they take it, a guy named Titus and all of the top commanders that went with him, they went into the Holy of Holies, and there they slaughtered pigs to their gods. Okay, this is the abomination of desolation, okay? It's happened before with another guy called Antiochus Epiphanes. It's a terrible, terrible act. Jesus is speaking at least in part about that particular moment. What Jesus says is when you see that coming, doesn't matter where you are in Israel, get out, okay? Just get out of that country. And what happened because of this is that early messianic believers, Jewish believers in Jesus, they went all over the world with the message of the gospel. They knew it's time to get out of this country, and they did. So that was, it actually turned out for good, but that's part of what is being referred to here. Is it also that there may be another Antichrist and the temple may be rebuilt and he may stand in the temple and do some things in some distant future time? Well, I suppose that's possible, but we should not read the Bible as prescriptive like this. We got to be careful. I would say that's a fun story. That may happen in the future. Okay, the Revelations, when we went to Revelations, we talked about things that may literally happen and things that are figurative. And what I said to you was, let's make sure we get the imagery right first, the message that God is getting to us in the text. And then maybe later we can talk about how it could tie into some event, but that's dangerous. I would say we know it happened in the past. What about the future? Not so sure. Okay, so we can talk about that. We can disagree vehemently. My wife disagrees with me on this one, by the way. And maybe she's right, actually. Who knows? But that's where I think we want to fall with that. Now, returning to our idea, though, because I don't want to lose steam here. Life will hurt. You will suffer unjustly for your faith. But hold on to your faith. Why? Because Christ is coming, and you are going to be rewarded with the very best of enemies. Christ is coming. You're going to be rewarded. Verse 24. But in those days following that distress, the sun will be darkened, the moon will not give its light, the stars will fall from the sky, the heavenly bodies will be shaken. At that time, people will see the Son of Man coming in clouds with great power and glory, and he will send his angels. He will gather his elect from the four winds, from the ends of the earth to the ends of the heavens. Now learn this lesson from the fig tree. As soon as its twigs get tender and its leaves come out, you know the summer is near. Even so, when you see these things happening, you know that it is near, right at the door. Truly I tell you, this generation will not pass by away until all these things have happened. Heaven and earth will pass away. My words will never pass away. So I want you to imagine that God is in heaven watching this debacle occur, watching not only that his children just suffer because we're getting towards the kingdom, but watching over and over people mistrust and distrust his workers, treating them poorly and unkindly. And eventually God says, that is enough. And when he does, it's all turned over. So the sun goes dark, okay? The stars start falling from the sky. The earth is shaking, the heavens, everything is shooken up. It is well and truly over. That's what he's saying. This is the final act, friends, okay? And then in the midst of this, out comes the Son of Man, Jesus. He's coming on the winds of heaven, and he instantly, all of those people who are crying out, who are suffering, he instantly takes them in his arms. They never have to worry about famine and disease anymore. They never have to worry about wars and rumors and wars anymore. They never have to worry about persecution. All the people who were persecuting his people, he says, you guys can go your way. My people will be with me. And they are alone forever, and we are with Christ. So we have a choice, right? The choice is when we want to suffer, okay? We can suffer now, and then Christ can come and take us away forever and ever and ever into joy, or we can choose to not suffer now, and then when Christ comes, he will come fighting us rather than on our sides. Now that's the choice that Jesus is laying before us. I am coming back. And we can think of this, and it's very interesting. What Jesus says is, think about the fig tree in summer. Okay, think about the fig tree in summer. Summer is coming, he says. How do you know? Because the tree keeps getting green and more green. Now, this is such an interesting thing. He's talking about persecution. The greening of the tree is more persecution, okay? That's what he's talking about. And so actually, what we do to get through to that day is we think about this. Every act of persecution I go through is like one more drip into a dam, and it's slowly filling up with all of these drips, all of this injustice, until it reaches full birth. And then what happens is the dam bursts, and it's God's wrath on all of this injustice, and he comes and he saves us out of it forever. And so strangely enough, just weirdly enough, the suffering that you're going through is telling you that Jesus is coming even sooner. The thing that you're going through that you say, this is an indication that God has really dropped the ball. No, Jesus says, I'm coming even sooner, my love. I'll be here to take you home. Don't worry, I've not neglected you. I'm just waiting until it's time. And I'm watching, and it's closer and closer and closer. And so this gives us hope. This gives us hope. Because we know where we're going, we know Jesus is coming back, and we know that the suffering we're going through is nothing surprising. It is an indication that he is closer and closer until he says, I'm right at the door. Now, Jesus says, for the generation, that last generation who goes through these things, that they won't go through it till the end before he comes back, okay? That he'll come back before the end of their lifetime. But what I want us to think about is actually that's just true, period. So Jesus Christ is coming back in less than your lifetime and a fraction, okay? So Jesus will come back your lifetime and a fraction. Some of you, for some of you, Jesus is coming back in 60 years. And for some of you, Jesus is coming back in 40 years. And some of you, Jesus is coming back in 20 years. And, you know, past your lifetime, that moment that you die, there it is, you're with him forever. What Jesus is saying is, listen, friends, you only have to suffer a little while. I will be back before you're done. I'm coming back. I will be there for you. And now we can go through the pain that we're going through. When you go to the doctor, you've been still feeling sick, it's pretty miserable, and the doctor says, well, this is good that you came in, you are sick, and you look miserable, and I imagine you are. And I don't want to hurt your feelings, but I'm going to make it worse, okay? So in a minute here, I've got this giant needle that I'm going to pluck into your body. It really stinks. I mean, it's no fun. If you don't like blood, don't even look this direction. Try to imagine something else, you know, because this has to happen, right? You don't say, no, I'm not taking the shot. I'm not taking the shot. No pain for me. That's it. I'm out. What you do is you say, well, okay, I get it. If I don't get the shot, things just get worse and I continue to be in pain. But if I just go through this pain, it's part of the process that I will eventually be in the joy of the Lord and be in his presence, right? I'll eventually get healed. That's what we're to do. The situation is not permanent. Quite soon we'll be with the King. So this is what we've seen, the new normal, which is our reality here. You will suffer. You will suffer for your faith. But the very best of endings awaits us. we preserve, persevere in our faith. What must we do? It's pretty simple. We need to persevere in our faith. And so what we're learning this morning is that faith is not a one-time decision. It's not, I started going to church when I was young, and that counts, right? It's not, I made a decision for the Lord a long time ago, and now I never ever think about it. It's not, I come to church once a week, and isn't that enough? I'm certainly not going to think about it during the rest of the week. What God is calling you to is to daily value and treasure your faith, because it will lead to you getting the real treasure at the end. To keep your eyes on it. Now, I have an illustration for this. And my illustration is a large amount of money that I had to put into the bank recently. So I'm responsible. I don't know why anybody would ever make me responsible of this, but I'm responsible for collecting different people's money who rent the facility. And I record it, and it goes on a little sheet, and other people can see it. And then eventually they say, you know, it's been a year and you haven't put any money in the bank. Why don't you take all that money, which we, you know, are you just keeping it under a sock? And the answer is yes, that's exactly what I'm doing. Okay. Why don't you take that money and put it into the bank? So I took the money and I counted it to make sure it was all there. And then I took out my wallet and I stuffed all that money in the wallet. And now it's big and fat. And then I put it in my pocket and I walked myself up to Muswell Hill and put it in the bank. But you know, as I'm going up the hill, I suddenly feel weird, because I've got a huge wad of cash in my pocket. And should someone decide to rob me, it's the only day in which it'll work out for them. Okay, they're going to make it rich. They're going to be doing great. And so what is happening is I'm kind of doing this number. Yep, still there. Okay. And then I put my hand in and feel the thickness. I mean, has a crafty thief managed to pull it out, take the bills out, and put it back in? No, still gone. And where is it in my pocket? Is it the very bottom? Because if I really turn the corner fast, it kind of might dribble out of my pocket, and then the end of the world happens if that. See, what I'm doing is I learned to just moment by moment as I'm walking up to the bank, I'm going to value this. I'm going to treasure it. If I lose it, I am in serious trouble. That's the way we're supposed to look at our faith. But the way we look at our faith is, this is the last thing of any importance whatsoever. Everything else that I'm interested in, that's what I'm interested in. What I'm not interested in is this $100 billion treasure in my pocket that someone is trying to take away from me. Because that's what Jesus says. He's out to take your faith. He'll use suffering. He'll use deceit. He'll use the pleasures of this world. Hold it fast. Day by day. Tomorrow you are a Christian. The day after you are a Christian. Tomorrow you believe in Christ. The day after, I will never bow. I am holding on to Jesus.